You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time for the Southern Cross with Kendall Hutt.
So hello, Kendall. How are we going today?
Good, thank you.
Cool. So first up on the Southern Cross segment, New Zealand's Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, Dr. Jan Wright, has released a report last week which revealed that with the way our emissions are going, the country may not be meeting its obligations under the Paris Agreement. What sort of effects does this have on the Pacific?
Well, the Pacific can't really handle a global average temperature above 1.5 degrees. It's very clear at the moment that the Pacific is on the front lines of climate change, and you know, the global average temperature at the moment is not above 1.5 degrees, and already people in the Pacific are probably the most felt victims of climate change. We have water scarcity issues because salt water is coming into the clean water tables under atolls and low-lying islands. There's also food shortages because of this sort of salination of food crops. So people in the Pacific are having to rely more on imported foods. And if you've had, you know, if you've lived off your own agricultural production for many years, switching to imported foods sort of causes a lot of health problems like diabetes. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most obvious effects of climate change in the Pacific is, of course, rising sea levels. And sea levels are expected to rise, you know, between 75 centimetres to 1.5 metres by the end of this century. So with this report stating that New Zealand's emissions are tracking upwards as opposed to downwards, and we're not going to meet the 11% emissions below 1990 levels, you know, in 13 years' time, it really has alarm bells ringing for people in the Pacific, but they are committed to making their plight very obvious on the world stage, and it's great that Fiji has the presidency of COP23 in November this year.
So why do you think New Zealand is lagging behind here when, like, clearly it's such a vital issue for the Pacific? Do you think we're sort of ignorant to the effect it's having on our neighbours?
I don't think we're ignorant to the effects it's having on our neighbours. I think we're very aware. It's more just a question of policy as opposed to compassion. I think the New Zealand government really does need to make that switch to having stronger policies on climate change. You know, this is what the Pacific are asking for, and this is what Dr. Jan Wright herself is asking for, you know, to implement a climate change law which puts our emissions targets into law so that, you know, we set them in stone and we will achieve them.
So still on the topic of climate change here, a Pacific journalism journal has recently released an issue on the subject. Why is this being timed to come out now?
So it's very timely that Pacific Journalism Review has released its 23rd volume this month. Fiji's Prime Minister Vareki Bainimarama is the president of COP23 in Bonn in Germany this year. And the Pacific is expected to take a charge of ensuring the targets agreed upon in Paris are followed at this event. It's great that the Pacific is leading such a global conference and ensuring that their voices are out there. And this journal includes articles from across the Asia-Pacific region, from Australia to Vietnam, and from Indonesia to Fiji. There's 13 climate change research articles, and they include commentaries from Greenpeace's journalist Phil Vine to Professor Bob Hackett, who is sort of an expert in advocating for climate change journalism. And there's also articles from experts from the University of the South Pacific on, you know, how the Pacific covers climate change, what they could improve on, what they're doing well, those sorts of things. So it's really important to have their voices included in a journal that is highly regarded on the academic stage.
Yeah, so I guess it's quite a comprehensive sort of analysis on the impact of climate change. Where could people get this journal?
So the journal is available online through the Pacific Media Centre's website. We did an article last week on the launch of the journal, and through that you can access our stuff on Tufere Access website, and also through Pacific Media Centre, as we link directly to the journal.
Cool. And in other news, Papua New Guinea's election saga continues. Can you give us a brief outline about what has happened so far, and can you tell us about what sort of developments have happened since the initial election took place?
So what has happened so far is a very controversial election. PNG holds their general elections every 5 years. They've never really run smoothly, and this one is not an exception. There's been allegations of fraud and corruption flying all about across this election period, the longest in the Pacific. The votes have come in, and the writs are currently being sort of counted and declared. But the issue here is that parties are already forming, wanting to start a new government, but not all of the writs have been declared. So there's 23 waiting, and the PNG Ombudsman Michael Dick had to win a court order in order to extend the general election writs to today at 2 p.m. in order for everyone's votes to be counted and included. Prime Minister Peter O'Neill's People's National Congress Party is already sort of joined, gone to their camp, and they're waiting to see who joins them. They think they've got the votes, they've got 54 seats, they need 56.
Right, so what sort of things do you think is going to happen then for the rest of the saga?
So for the rest of the saga, by 2 p.m. We hopefully should know what party has the enough votes to rule or govern PNG. If the PNC does not have 56 seats, they will have to form a coalition. So it's just whether or not independent MPs will make that switch to PNC's camp. There are a lot of critics of Peter O'Neill's government. People were hoping for a change this election. So it's still unsure at this stage whether or not we are going to see a change. You know, it would be nice, I think, after 5 years for the people in PNG to see a change. It's been quite a tumultuous election period as well. You know, just last week we had an elected official trying almost kidnapped. There's also been gunfights and a lot of gun violence in the streets as well. It's a very tumultuous time. I think people really do want to see that change.
Yeah, so why do you think this party is still doing quite well in terms of getting numbers in the elections if there is quite a call for change?
I think it's there have been a lot of problems with the electoral roll this year. They're not new issues. They have been trying to solve them. So a lot of people weren't able to vote this election. In the University of Papua New Guinea, there were only enough voting papers for not even half of the voting population. So a lot of students missed out on voting, and a lot of other people throughout PNG have missed out on voting. There's obviously, PNG is quite a vast country, and there's a lot of people in the highlands as well. They did make sure that there were enough voting papers up there. So I think it's just a matter of, yes, there are allegations of fraud and corruption. They might have a ring of truth to them. But if a party has 54 seats, it's not necessarily seen as a victory. They do need to have that majority. And whether or not people are going to align themselves with PNC because of all of this controversy, that's the question.
Yeah, for sure. So finally, is it true that Indonesia's President Joko Widodo intends to implement a war on drugs policy similar to the policy of Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines?
Yes, so the Jakarta Post reported, the Jakarta Globe, sorry, reported the other week that President Joko Widodo, or Jokowi as he's popularly known, does intend to enforce a sort of war on drugs policy similar to Rodrigo Duterte, which sort of basically means that they could be shot on sight if they resist arrest. Of course, drug dealers are going to risk arrest. They do not want to be caught. I think the difference here is that they're saying that they have a emergency in the country around narcotics. So this is more in terms of foreign drug traffickers having trade in Indonesia, as opposed to Joko Widodo going after his own drug dealers, you know, in his own country type thing. So they are trying to crack down on foreign drug traffickers, but he did say, you know, in a quote, you know, if they do resist arrest, just shoot them. So it is quite alarming, and allegedly, I think it's around 8,000 people have lost their lives in Rodrigo Duterte's war on drugs in the Philippines, which just raises a host of human rights issues. So I think it's alarming that this is happening in Indonesia, that this has been sort of imported into that country.
Yeah, especially since the sort of 7,000 to 8,000 people who have lost their lives over the last year were majority Filipino poor people. So I guess it's quite sort of hopeful that Widodo is saying that he wants to target sort of people bringing drugs into the country rather than his own people, but how can we be sure about this?
We can't be sure. It's, you know, it's the discretion of the police officers who arrest these drug traffickers. Mm. It's also the discretion of Joko Widodo's own government as to you know, how they implement this policy. I hope that it isn't going to be implemented the way that Duterte has implemented his. You know, yes, with every policy there are critics and there are proponents. With Rodrigo Duterte's, it's not necessarily an even split, but there is that support saying, you know, drugs has always been a problem in the Philippines. Duterte is right to crack down on them. Perhaps extrajudicial killing isn't the right way to go about it, but he's doing a good thing. So I'm not too sure how the people in Indonesia are going to respond to a similar law.
Mm, definitely. Right, well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Kendall. That was a great chat, and that's all we have time for today.
Thank you.
That was the Southern Cross.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.